I don't want anybody to feel that I'm speaking on their behalf and probably making some comments that are a little bit challenging. So just let me start with some phrases. Stop and search is a tactic and not a power. In fact, there are over 20 pieces of legislation under which police officers can stop and search a person. But these have been codified under the Police and Criminal Evidence Act. Stop and search is an operational tactic that has caused the most significant damage to police and community relations. It is one police activity, in my view, that has the potential to bring the police closer to all communities and reinforce the philosophy of policing by consent. However, it has been the one tactic that's called into question the legitimacy of the police. Stop and search is the one operational tactic, again in my view, that requires consistent and continuous strategic oversight to make it the best tool in the armoury of the police service to keep the public safe and reduce crime. Now, in light of the damage that stop and search has done to police community relationship, to trust in the police fairness and legitimacy, and the prominence of stop and search in significant public inquiries into police practice, the question is, should the police be allowed to continue to use stop and search? I will answer that last question, in my view, is an unequivocal yes. However, I'm going to share some data with you, which many of you would have seen before, not for the sake of it, because I want to make some points, again, from my interpretation of the way the history of stop and search, and the way it's been used, the way it's been documented. So this is just shows us some stop and search data over the years from 1986 to 2017-18. And I just want to make two points with this. If we look at 1997-98, we see two drops in the use of stop and search by the police, in the recorded use of stop and search by the police. So we go down from just over a million down to just under 700,000. And then the second significant drop that continues for much longer follows 2011-2012. So if we look at that first drop, stop and search increases significantly. So we get to the publication of the McPherson inquiry. So we get to the phrase of institutional racism. As a collective, the institution of policing decided, or those operational officers that used stop and search, that they were no longer going to be using stop and search as freely as they did, because they didn't want to be accused of being racist. For me, that's a significant reaction to an issue that's of concern. And then stop and search continues to rise after a couple of years of discussion and consoling that that wasn't what institutional racism meant. Police officers started using stop and search again, and it rises. So we'll get to a position where we have a new commissioner in the Met, and one of the things they had as his priority was to actually look at our use of stop and search and put into practice measures that we can actually control the use of stop and search and make it more effective. So we moved away from a single measure of arrest to what have been described as positive outcomes. And probably in hindsight, one of the acronyms that was developed to put into practice the work that now Lord Hogan Howe wanted the Met to do, which resulted in the Stop and Search Good Practice Guide developed by the Home Office, produced by the Home Office and announced by the Home Secretary in April 2014, was a significant reduction in the use of stop and search. And again, some of the comments that were being made by officers were, well, if you don't think we've been doing it right for such a long time, then we're not going to do stop and search anymore if you don't trust us. So the point I wish to make, two significant external drivers made a difference to the way that police use stop and search on the street. But I just want to add another couple of points. When you analyse stop and search data, not every police officer carries out stop and search. When you look at the people being stopped, there are some people who feature more often in being stopped and searched than the general population. And I'll make some points about that as we go through. So the next slide looks at section 60, which is one of those powers, in my view, that I think is not actually described the way it's been used or the way it's been authorised. In my view, I think section 60 in its authorisation gives greater scope to hold to account the institution than a section 1 power. And why do I say that? For a section 60 to be authorised, you need, we've now reverted back, an officer of the rank of inspector, but with a good practice guide, that was changed to an officer of the rank of executive. What used to be Association of Chief Police Officers, now National Police Chiefs Council. So Commander in the Met, Assistant Chief Constables in County Forces to authorise a Section 60 based on intelligence which was documented that there was going to be violence being used in a particular geographical area, or there were going to be people carrying offensive weapons. That was documented, and the authority came from that documentation. And the reason why I'm saying it's that made it greater to be scrutinised, held to account, is Section 1 depended on an individual officer developing reasonable ground. And if we can document a Section 60, it meant that if an external body wanted to actually then find out why it was authorised, it's much easier to do so and hold the service to account. As we can see on there, Section 60 follows a similar pattern to Section 1, the PACE, till we get to 2009 and 2011 and 12, when we started doing the work on actually controlling the use of stop and search, having a greater measure. To the point, when you look at 2014, 2015, 2016, it was barely negligible, this use of Section 60. Now, where we are at the moment is an exponential rise in the use of Section 60 over the last 6 months. And as I just commented, with the authority level being now reduced from an ACPO level or NGCC level back to an inspector. I think there's a risk there, and I'll talk about that in a minute. Next one. If we look at the effectiveness of stop and search, one of the things that we've always been aware of, the more stop and search that's done, the lower its results, positive outcome. And this has just been, this is just arrest rate. So as the use of stop and search, the numbers drop, the effectiveness increases in terms of arrest. And the Commissioner mentioned, if we look at the wider measure that we're using to measure the success of stop and search at the moment, the positive outcome, this is where you get to your 30%. So when you put into that, warnings given, cautions given for drugs possession without arrest, finding things that you weren't supposed to be finding that didn't lead to criminal offence. So the positive outcome increased. But it's significant in the sense of, as the number reduces, the effectiveness goes up. So one corollary you can draw from that, are police officers being more circumspect, more intelligence-led in their use of stop and search? I just pose a question. And then if you look at the reasons why officers document how to carry out stop and search, there's one reason there that remains consistent and continues to rise, in my view, worryingly. And that's offences of drugs. But when we say drugs, we talk about cannabis possession. We're not talking about Class A or possession. And that will lead me to leave you with a challenge at the end of this presentation. Also worryingly, if we talk about the use of stop and search, and we look at the reasons under offensive weapons, hopefully you can probably get a feel of this, it remains consistent. Even as we go through the period of 2005 to 2008, when we were experiencing very similar violence in our streets that we're experiencing today, youth violence, death of young people with the use of knives, and at that time, guns. When we as an institution were actually advocating we should use stop and search more to take offensive weapons off the street, that remained worryingly static. So you ask the question, what was happening between the policy and the leadership messages and the operational activity of officers on the ground? Next question. Sorry. So we look at those, again, resulting in drugs arrest. And again, the consistency there for the black category. So if we're talking about the numbers of stop and search being carried out, reducing, that level of arrest for the black cohort remains remarkably consistent. And you ask, why hasn't that dropped? When you look at the level of white people stopped who were arrested for drugs. I'm posing lots of questions, but I guess I don't want to be telling you things that you already know, but I will conclude it with a final question and target for you, or a challenge. Disproportionality. Disproportionality has always been a difficult issue in terms of stop and search. It's one of those things that causes, and still causes, the organisation great anxiety to try and explain. But my take, as you look at that, number of stop and search going down, disproportionality increasing. Now, my take on this, that could be a rational movement of disproportionality if stop and search was being used in an intelligence-led way, if stop and search was being used to deal with violence, and I will keep that violence, street violence, in London. Because if our media report is accurate when it tells us that the majority of perpetrators and the majority of victims of street violence where knives are used predominantly are young black men, then if stop and search is being used in an intelligence-led way, then you could explain why the disproportionality goes up. So for me, that could be a positive result. However, I am not confident that as an institution, we're very good at explaining why that disproportionality goes up when the numbers go down and when we say we're using stop and search to deal with street violence. So some of the reasons why we have disproportionality. It could be partly due to the distribution of crime, as I'm just trying to explain. If we're using stop and search in an intelligence-led way for specific crimes and the rest of it, you can understand why disproportionality goes up. But I'm not confident that that's what happens across the board. But this doesn't really relate to for black people. Because you don't necessarily have to be in a high crime area to be a victim of stop and search. And there's some good examples of black professors in London, in a particular part of South London, being stopped because middle-aged black professors, because they were black. Disproportionality, stop and search, disproportionality is related, associated with deprivation and inequality. Where do police officers carry out stop and search when they have the time? Predominantly in your working class areas. And some people say because that's where they get the calls from the public to relieve situation. In the middle class affluent area, they probably don't get the calls to deal with the issues that happens in the working class area. So you could explain why it's done there. Disproportionality associated with wealth and influence. And there's a map I'm not going to show you, but if you look at the level of disproportionality in the use of stop and search, it's higher in the suburbs of, in the suburb boroughs of London than it is in central boroughs. Probably because of the uneven distribution of minority group, and is stop and search the levels that we see in terms of disproportionality. Certainly, in the qualitative data that we get back from people who have been stop and search, is any significant amount of it down to racial profiling? Both questions in the next one. So, and this is work that's been done by a colleague, Mike Shine, at London School of Economics. Crunching the data, black people are arrested at a higher rate than white people in the use of stop and search, yet receive our support disposal at a lower rate. Black people are 12 times more likely to be arrested than whites. Proportion of arrests resulting from stop and search, 5% for white, 17% for black. So, and we talked about solutions, look for solutions. Where do I think we ought to be in the next 5, 10, maybe 15 years? As I said before, stop and search is not carried out by every single officer. In actual fact, some officers, those officers who carry out stop and search, are very good at it because they develop a confidence and they develop what we describe as street craft. And if you look at the Violent Crime Task Force at the moment, they probably carry out far more stop and search than maybe your general patrol officer. So in that sense, should we get to a position where we accredit officers to do stop and search? And I guess the better example is that a custody sergeant, there will be a family liaison officer. Should we train officers to the extent where we develop their knowledge and their confidence, and those officers who carry out stop and search, and then when we get to a level, they become accredited, and those officers can carry out stop and search. But we can't preclude all officers from not carrying out stop and search, because it's an activity that you would expect an officer in uniform in a public place to do. So when those officers who are not accredited because they've not received the training, because they don't want to receive the training, because they don't want to do it, whatever reason, when those officers carry out stop and search and it goes wrong, I think we should hold the senior officer in the organisation accountable. Not the officer himself or herself, but the senior officer accountable. And why do I say that? Two reasons. I believe we should get into a position where we train officers and develop their knowledge so they understand, have the skill, have the ability, not only understand the legal reasons why they carry out stop and search, but the social ramifications, the community ramifications, why they do stop and search. And when they get through that basis, then they have the knowledge and the ability to carry out stop and search. That's one reason. The other reason is, as I said before, stop and search is an activity that should receive strategic oversight consistently and continuously. Because if it doesn't, it's very easy to put the responsibility back to the individual officer or the group of officers who carry out the activity without actually going up to the chain, to the strategic level, to say, this is one activity that's caused an enormous amount of problems. When do we hold you to account? Should it be a chief officer? Should it be a deputy chief officer? But I think that's a level it should be at. And that's why I believe stop and search should be accredited. And my challenge to you to consider, probably my question, stop and search should not be used as a form of social control and should be used more for crime reduction. And I believe the way we use it at the moment is more leaning towards using it, the institution of policing, using stop and search as a form of social control rather than a form of crime prevention. Thank you.